Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Final hour of this Thursday on Grant and Danny. Tomorrow, big old fat show for you. 12 to 2, second half of our regularly scheduled G&D, our sit-down with Kirk Cousins. Special, exclusive season recap interview, noon to 2 at Jam and Java in Vienna. There are still a couple tickets available. Go to jamandjava.com. All the proceeds benefiting the DC Dream Center. We're recapping the 2017 season, looking ahead to future with or without Kirk Cousins, and who better to hear from than the starting quarterback. Michael Phillips of the Richmond Times-Dispatch joins us now. Michael, do you think Kirk Cousins will be the Redskins' starting quarterback in 2018?
I would give it a 30% chance of happening, Grant, and I'm a little disappointed we didn't sell tickets to this interview here. I think we probably could have made a lot of bank.
I think we could have done really it downstairs, DC Lottery Live.
Exactly. I would give it about a 30% chance. To me, the most likely path to that is if he is transition tagged and declines to present an offer for the Redskins to match, which would put him on that one-year $28.8 million deal. I think they could absorb that salary. I think there's a compelling enough case to do that, you would say. Keep the band together for one more year, maybe take one more crack at this before you have to rebuild. But I would consider that certainly less than 50% possibility. I think he's probably playing for another team this time next year.
So, Miguel, break this down. You know I love pies because they're so wonderful, and it's a joy that we get to live in a world where pies exist. But in a non-food pie, how much of this do you think is that Kirk would actually just prefer something else? I mean, he's too much of a diplomat and too polished and correct to come out and say something. He's not going to do a LeBron James, Jim Gray type thing this Friday, you wouldn't think. But how much of this is he would just rather be somewhere else where he's wanted, where he's appreciated, and where he can thrive?
I think the great mystery of this whole thing, you guys can ask him about this, but it's a hypothetical that he probably doesn't even know either, and that is, had the Redskins presented him with a fair market offer, what we considered to be the going rate for quarterbacks, whether it's a Matt Stafford deal or something like that, if they had presented that to Kirk, would he have taken it or would he have turned it down? And obviously there's your answer. If he had turned it down, he wants to be somewhere else.
Let me jump in real quick. We asked him that last year, as a matter of fact, when he was on the show after he didn't get a deal. And I said, is there any number they could have offered you that you would have accepted? And he said, no, not this offseason.
I think it's one thing to say that. It's another to be in that position, though, because I think in that moment of receiving that offer, that speaks, in a way that he wants to be spoken to. And he has never felt respect from the organization. He's never felt loved by the organization or appreciated by the organization. And I think an offer like that would communicate a whole lot of love and appreciation from the organization. So I think it would kind of turn the conversation a little bit away from they don't respect him to obviously they do to make an offer like that. I think if the answer is indeed no and he would have turned that down, I think then there's too much water under the bridge or whatever you're saying is, and he's ready to move on and be somewhere else.
So as you kind of go through this then, and how we got here, we kind of know, and you can blame whoever you want. I mean, people that don't like Kirk will blame him more than they should, in my opinion. I think this was a Redskins issue. It's their job in the building to figure out who's good and who should be kept. They did it with Kerrigan, did it with Trent Williams, did it with Jordan Reed, et cetera. Didn't do it with a guy that's been there for a whole bunch of seasons now. So here we are. How do you think they sell whatever happens to this fan base? Because right now people aren't excited. People aren't watching games. They're not going to games. We did the first hour of the show on how people are checking out and finding other teams to care for, et cetera. Michael, how do they get people excited again? What's the move that gets people back in?
Yeah, let's bake another delicious pie here on disenchantment, I guess. And I think a big percentage of it is just not winning. That's the slice of the pie you want to be eating. is the not winning pie. When teams win, people go to the game. See the Washington Capitals, who, if they start losing again, people would not go to their games anymore. And yeah, I'm sure somebody would call into your radio show and say, oh, the in-game presentation is not as good or the giveaways aren't as good. But the bottom line is people want to see winners. People want to go to winning sporting events, see winning teams, see great athletes. And right now the Redskins are not furnishing that. And, you know, I think the only way to turn around fan disenchantment is to win. I think from a PR perspective, that's why I think the transition tag is so enticing to them. I think it offers an out. If you transition tag him and he receives whatever it is, $27, $28 million a year from another team, I think it gives the Redskins an opportunity, you know, Bruce Allen an opportunity to sit in front of his desk with the Redskins network microphone and say, my goodness, he's clearly not worth that. We made the right decision here. You know, that may be right in a vacuum. Of course, there was a series of wrong decisions that led to the right decision, but I think that gives them the cleanest out if you're going to break with them.
Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. We're going to be taking calls in a few minutes on whether or not Jay Gruden, if he wants to make a change as the defensive coordinator spot, can get away with it, or if it's just too bad of a look because he'll be going into his fifth year with his fourth defensive coordinator after just 1 year of Greg Minuski. So I guess two-parter here if you can answer these. First, how did Minuski do? Does he deserve to come back? Second, if Jay Gruden wants to make a change, do you think he can and he could get away with it, or would it be too damaging to him as a head coach?
So I think it'd have to be a name. I think obviously you'd have to get a Paul Gunter or, you know, a Wade Phillips caliber name. I think if you brought in a big name like that, and certainly a brand name, a recognizable one, people would forgive you for making a change if you upgrade. In the same way that a lot of people who like Kirk Cousins would say, you know, if they could trade him in for Aaron Rodgers right now, of course you go do that. I mean, there's some moves you just make in life that, you know, I think if you can upgrade to that extent, nobody would hold it against him. If you're talking about having another search where we bring 10 guys in and do the interview process and you end up with, you know, a candidate everybody's lukewarm on, I think that'd be a pretty bad look. And I think at some point, you know, and I like Jay. I like Jay a lot, obviously very good offensive mind. At some point, though, the head coach is responsible for what happens on the defensive side of the ball. And ever since he's been in Washington, you guys know this, Jay has been very hands-off on that side of the ball. He's wanted to hire defensive coordinators, let them do their thing, you know, let that production speak for itself. And that is fine, but at the end of the day, the defense goes on the head coach's record, and the defense is part of the team. You know, I don't know if Jay is equipped to be hands-on with the defense the same way he is with the offense, but there's still a measure of accountability for the results of that unit, and they're not getting it done enough. I think you go back and look at the what-ifs. One is obviously, what if Kirk Cousins had, you know, been loved by the organization since day one? I think a huge what-if is, what if Wade Phillips were the defensive coordinator here, and there were a couple junctures where it could have happened? You know, that I think that would have been a big game changer in the course of this franchise.
At Michael P. RTD is his Twitter account. He covers the Redskins. Richmond Times-Dispatch. Okay, Miguel, let's go non-quarterback division here, but that's going to dominate all our conversations. And frankly, it's exhausting, but yet here we are. What's the other first order of business? What's the other thing that you would go day one, as soon as this quarterback situation is revolved or it isn't, they've got to do to ensure a more successful campaign in the following couple of years?
Yeah, well, I'll go all three sides of the ball here. Start with the offense. You got to figure out the running back situation. Is Samaje Perine your guy? Do you need to open this thing up again? They need a star running back. They need, you know, it doesn't have to be a name star running back. Alfred Morris wasn't a star when he showed up here, but he produced like one. You got to find that guy. On special teams, it's time for a returner, a punt and kick returner. You know, Jamison Crowder did not get the job done, but Shawn Breland's probably on his way out. It's been a huge, a glaring hole for this team, and that's an area where you can make a difference in games. And then on the defense, I'd say inside linebacker is job one. You got to re-sign Zach Brown. I think he's number one on your absolutely must re-sign list of guys based on their performances this year. And then you figure out what you want to do with Compton and Foster. That's a position where you got a lot of decisions to make and you know, potentially maybe need to be drafting in that direction.
Speaking of the draft, I genuinely believe you could compete next season. Colt McCoy, the problem I have with him more than anything else is he just won't stay healthy. There's zero chance he could play 16 games. But let's say it's Colt McCoy or a guy like that. I think if they invested heavily in defense and could run the ball a little bit, you could be about what they were this year. Schedule's not going to be as tough. There's no way you're going to have as many injuries. This was kind of a once every several years kind of scenario. So you might be able to compete if you were able to upgrade your defense to being, you know, the 10th to 12th best unit in the league. See New Orleans going from 7-9 three straight years to a Super Bowl contender the year their defense makes strides. But that's going to take, to me, drafting three or four starting defensive linemen. Do you think that they'll invest in that way in the draft, or are they going to be playing the let's go get a wide receiver, let's go get a running back in the draft kind of game?
Well, they better not get a wide receiver. That'd be an indictment of the Josh Doctson situation, and that would just be, you know, that'd set them back a couple more years. I agree with you on Colt. I think he's good. I think he's a good option. I don't think he plays 16
games for you. Well, I don't think he's good, so we don't agree there. But I'm just saying I think you can get by with him.
I think Colt could finish 8-8 for you. I mean, in the NFL, that's something. That's not nothing. I don't think he'd play all 16 games. That's my problem with Colt. But you talk about needing to draft returners and linebackers and linebackers. I think if you draft on the defense, you're making a statement. We're going to try to win this thing now. We're going to try to become a playoff team now. If you draft, you know, at positions where you've got it, or, you know, do best player available, you're still trying to build, maybe keep this window open. I don't know where you guys are at on this. I think if there weren't as many injuries as there were this year, this is probably a 9-7 season. So you're looking at 9-7, 8-7-1, 9-7. No reason to think you couldn't sustain that, you know, going forward. I think you could produce another 9-7 season if you wanted to. I think the fan base is spoiled. I don't think they like 9-7 seasons. The comment I get the most on Twitter that makes me laugh is, we've been mediocre for 20 years. Why do you want another season of mediocrity? Well, check the records. You haven't been mediocre for 20 years. You've put up a lot of 4-12s in
there. There's a lot of bad there.
I 4-12 and 9-7 are not the same. I understand that there's a section of the fan base that says it wasn't a Super Bowl, it's all losses to me. Well, it's not to me. 9-7 feels very different than 4-12. I think you can make a compelling case for continuing to build on that.
At Michael PRTD, what do you think their record would have been this year with their injuries and their schedule if McCoy started 16 games?
Instead of 7-9, let's say 6-10. I think there's only
really
a one game difference if Colt McCoy plays every game for you. I think you look at Kirk won games for them. If they had won the Saints game, I would chalk that up, obviously, as that was a win Kirk got that Colt couldn't have got. But that one, you know, that one wasn't on the board, unfortunately. I'm looking at a couple of games where you say Kirk elevated his team in a level that Colt couldn't have done. That last drive in Seattle was a great drive, but maybe Colt plays a more efficient game across the board. That's a great defense, obviously. It's tough to break down. I think it's a 1-2 win difference if you keep Colt healthy for all 16 games, and he won't, and Kirk will be, and so that's a big differentiator for me.
Yeah, makes sense. I would add him 5-11 probably if Colt was a starter.
With one hero game maybe against Dallas that everybody remembers for 3 years, but they forget about getting shut out and not being able to manage a forward pass against the Rams two weeks later.
Never forget, Michael, his last start that he finished the game, he got shut out by the Rams at FedEx Field. Don't forget that.
Well, I haven't heard much about that Dallas game. I'd be curious to hear more. Apparently, that's the thing that happened.
He went down there and he won. That's Colt McCoy. That's Colt football, Texas football forever.
At Michael PRTD. Always love having you on the show, buddy. Thank you.
See you, buddy.
You bet.
Richmond Times-Dispatch is where you can find his work. You heard the question we posed to him about the defensive coordinating spot. If Jay Gruden wants to make a change, can he? Or will it just look too awful and send a bad signal about him as a head coach to make another DC change? We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny. A year ago at this time, it was a pretty well-known story in Ashburn that Joe Barry was not going to come back as the Redskins defensive coordinator. He had been hired as the DC of an 0-16 Lions team with very little resume. Joe Barry did not produce statistically in the way that the Redskins were hoping, and it's an easy case to move on from a guy who has a bad defense and has nothing to fall back on. Greg Minuski's defense was better than Joe Barry's. Not by a ton statistically, it was actually very similar.
And by the end of the year, it ended up being the same after the injuries.
Which is somewhat surprising, but you can at least make the case, unlike with Barry, that in the case of Minuski, had he have had more health, his defense would have been substantially better. There's no doubt, in my opinion, that they would have been probably in that 16-20 range rather than in the low 20s if they had Josh Norman at 100%. More importantly, at the inside linebacking spot, Zach Brown, who for the entire second half of the year is in a walking boot after games before he ends up tapping out. The inside linebacking position that was eventually run by Martrell Spate and Zach Vigil, oh my gosh, get me out of here, still had Mason Foster or Will Compton. The loss of Jonathan Allen, the loss of Monte Nicholson doesn't get talked about a lot. I think those were two of their three biggest losses of the season with Chris Thompson. I really believe that.
Yeah.
The way Nicholson runs in their secondary, the speed he brought to the back end of their defense, the ability to separate receivers from the football, make a couple plays. When he departed midway through the year and D'Angelo Hall just didn't have it, and then they went back to DeShazer Everett, by the end of the year kind of got his sea legs under him, was a little bit better. For a couple games with just the guy on the field, they missed him. They missed Jonathan Allen. So Minuski would have been better with all those guys, but name me a defensive coordinating jag somewhere. They'll be better with that group too.
Of course.
When healthy. Jay Gruden now has to decide. Paul Gunther's available for the minute. I think he's going to end up with John Gruden in Oakland as of this time next week. Do I go make another DC change? Do I go get whoever the guy is going to be for the rest of my time in Washington for the next 4 or 5 years? Or do I let Minuski run this thing back again? I would like to see them do better at defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see them bring in a substantial name with a great track record, because I think there will be a couple guys available this year they could do that with. But I am on record, and I'll double down on this. I don't think they can. I think there is a stink on you as a coach when you make a DC change 4 times in 5 years as an offensive head coach that doesn't leave. I think it almost reeks of a little bit of desperation when you're now 3 and 3 years, 4 and 5 years going into what is a make-or-break season, because you're not getting an extension this offseason when everyone gets drunk at the combine.
Right.
That's not happening. So if I'm Jay, I don't even think I have the luxury to do it. Here's what Michael Phillips just said. He, of course, with the Richmond Times-Dispatch on this subject.
Well, I think it'd have to be a name. I think, obviously, you'd have to get a Paul Gunter, you know, a Wade Phillips-caliber name. I think if you brought in a big name like that, and certainly a brand name, a recognizable one, people would forgive you for making a change if you upgrade. In the same way that a lot of people who like Kirk Cousins would say, you know, if they could trade him in for Aaron Rodgers right now, of course you go do that. I mean, there's some moves you just make in life that, you know, I think if you can upgrade to that extent, nobody would hold it against him. If you're talking about having another search where we bring 10 guys in and do the interview process and you end up with, you know, a candidate everybody's lukewarm on, I think that'd be a pretty bad look. And I think at some point, you know, and I like Jay. I like Jay a lot, obviously very good offensive mind. At some point, though, the head coach is responsible for what happens on the defensive side of the ball. And ever since he's been in Washington, you guys know this.
I want to come back to the rest of this clip in a second. I think I am the only person who thinks this, because I argue with people online about this all the time. I don't put defensive failures on a head coach who is Jay Gruden, offensive-minded, Sean McVay, offensive-minded, Kyle Shanahan, offensive-minded.
Yeah, we didn't do it with Gibbs. He said, see you Sunday, Richie.
Exactly. And these guys now, more than even during the Gibbs era, to be completely honest with you,
mm-hmm.
are hired for their acumen on a side of the ball. Sean McVay with the Rams sits on a water cooler like a kid at a soccer practice, drawing up the script for the next series, meeting with Jared Goff. He takes his headset off and goes and talks to Jared Goff while Wade Phillips coaches up the defense. He will be the coach of the year in the NFL, and people are falling all over themselves to compliment this
right.
guy. He has very little to do with their defense on Sundays. Now, because he's a savant and he's a genius with offensive acumen, he also helps out a lot with their defensive plan during the week, I'm sure. If he sees something at practice, he will critique or analyze, just like Jay Gruden does. But the notion that on a Sunday when you give up 38 against Minnesota, that's Jay Gruden's cross to bear. I disagree. Here are the things, if my coach is an offensive-minded coach, that I really care about. Number one, how is the offense performing? Is he getting receivers open with design? Are there plays after the catch because guys are wide open in space? The Redskins were top 3 in the league in yards after catch this year. How is the development of my quarterback position? He's a former quarterback under his tutelage. Cousins, better than when he got here. McCoy, better than when he got here. Nate Sudfeld just played pretty well in Philadelphia, benefited from his tutelage. Where does my offense rank? They've been number 2, number 11. They've been top 10 the last 2 years in yards per play before right. this one with all the injuries. The other thing is, you want to talk preparation? Are you prepared? Do they play hard? Do they quit? You had the Chargers game, failure, Jay Gruden, getting your team ready. You had if you want to say week 17 against the Giants, failure, getting your team ready. Twice this year, fine. McAdoo, who get fired, a lot of the guys that just lost jobs, had 6 or 7 of those games. But I'm not pinning on him defense. Just like Mike Zimmer, the defensive mastermind of the tremendous defensive Vikings, if their offense is terrible, I'm not going to Mike Zimmer and going, dude, you got to get this offense fixed.
Yeah, what's going on? You guys can't get a first down.
You hired me to have a top five defense. That's what I'm giving you. I've hired an offensive coordinator to do that. So am I crazy in disagreeing with Phillips and most people when they say, because people will call in and say, you got to blame the head coach for defense. He runs the whole thing.
Well,
I don't think the league works that way anymore.
Here's where the blame lies. You've gone either in-house or to a guy that wouldn't get a defensive coordinator job with your hires. That's
blame
where the blame
him for
goes.
Hires, but I'm saying people put performance on defense on him because he's the head coach. Like when I've talked with this topic about this with Chad. Chad's point is like, if you're the program director of a radio station, everything comes back to you. Well, that's true, but that doesn't mean that it's your fault if something that isn't up to you goes wrong.
That's not a good comp. It's different industry. So if you're the head of an organization, if you're the team president and crappy things happen underneath you, yeah, that matters. But you were brought in because you're an offensive mind. You don't know anything about defense. No one's asking you to do defensive stuff. The same way that if CK had to, our program director had to like, do some sort of web tasking, and he wasn't up to it because he never done it before, and they have somebody that's designated for that, he hires the wrong guy and the web stuff sucks. That's where he's responsible, not for the day-to-day.
By the way, coaches that are geniuses when it comes to one side of the ball love talking about the other side of the ball. Because if you talk, I remember having conversations with Kyle and Sean about this, but if you talk with those guys, you cannot be a great offensive mastermind if you aren't also brilliant in thinking about defenses.
Yeah,
like Jay Gruden.
How do you diagnose me?
Exactly.
You have to think that way.
I went and sat down with him this past off season ago to talk about the arena football. I was getting the job as the Washington Valor play-by-play gig, and I went and hung out in Jay's office and talked AFL and differences and things like that. He didn't really want to talk about offensive design of the Arena League. He wanted to talk about defensive coverages. That's all we talked about was defense. It was crazy. But I realized in that moment, that's what offensive guys like to do. So I'm sure he helps Minuski and Barry and those guys out. I'm not saying he has nothing to do with it. But do you agree with me that especially now with guys like McVay or McDaniels, when you hire guys who are great on a side of the ball, you're not asking them to run the defense also?
Right, you're not running the defense. So where you and I will disagree, that not disagree, but I will emphasize one point. I'm going to keep hammering this home. I blame Jay Gruden for hiring Joe Barry because he didn't want Wade Phillips. He didn't want
too.
A guy that was going to overshadow him. That was my belief as always. Now, I understand that for a first-time head coach. That's what makes what Sean McVay did so special.
I don't think that's why he didn't want to hire Wade
Phillips. I do, and I know you've heard differently, but that, to me, was the big deal.
Well, I've never heard anything about that. I've never heard differently, in fairness. My take on that, though, is he's never had that problem where he didn't want to surround himself. Like, if you look, he's the kind of happy-go-lucky, I don't care. Yeah, Bill Callahan's been a head coach. He's my O-line coach. Jim Haslett's been a head coach. I'll keep him as my defensive coordinator. I mean, he had, I think, 3 head coaches on his staff at one point. So to me, if I was a coach, I would have 0 if I've never done this before and I'm 46 right. years old. I've never really thought that was his thinking. Maybe you're right on Wade Phillips.
So I've always thought that specifically about Phillips because that really successful guy, Jim Haslett, was a terrible head coach. Callahan, bombed out of Oakland, et cetera. I always thought that Wade Phillips was a really sexy name and that the instant you hire your own replacement. That becomes your fill-in option, whereas the other guys didn't have that cachet.
He gave
but that
up
may be semantics.
Play calling to the sexy name McVay. He gave up the offensive design in the run game to Bill Callahan, mm-hmm. who had been a head coach. I mean, he never seemed territorial with credit, but maybe in that case he was. Here's the question. We want your calls next. We'll open up the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines at 800-636-1067. If Jay Gruden wants to make a change at defensive coordinator again, can he do it without looking terrible? Or do you think it would be a bad enough look that it would call bigger picture Gruden things into question if he wanted to change out Minuski for someone who becomes available who's better this offseason? 800-636-1067 is the number on the Fan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
At some point, though, the head coach is responsible for what happens on the defensive side of the ball. And ever since he's been in Washington, you guys know this, Jay has been very hands-off on that side of the ball. He's wanted to hire defensive coordinators, let them do their thing, you know, let that production speak for itself. And that is fine, but at the end of the day, the defense goes on the head coach's record, and the defense is part of the team. I don't know if Jay is equipped to be hands-on with the defense the same way he is with the offense, but there's still a measure of accountability for the results of that unit, and they're not getting it done enough. I think you go back and look at the what-ifs. One is obviously, what if Kirk Cousins had, you know, been loved by the organization since day one? I think a huge what-if is, what if Wade Phillips were the defensive coordinator here? And there were a couple junctures where it could have happened. You know, that I think that would have been a big game changer in the course of this franchise.
There's no doubt about that. Michael Phillips hitting a nail on the head. He was the one that got away, and that seemed like it was a Jay Gruden decision. Remember the weird story that came out as we welcome you back on Grant and Danny?
That interview, man.
Did Wade write a book, and it came out in his book?
It was an excerpt in there where it wasn't even an interview. It was like after, you know, Jay's Cincinnati teams a couple times met Wade Phillips, his defense in the playoffs, and Jay's like, I got you that one time, though, on a reverse.
Yeah, he kept showing him like a play and basically saying, why didn't you know what to do with this play or something?
Wade's like, yeah, you guys managed 200 total yards and you got shut out, or, you know, Andy Dalton threw four picks. I mean, we kicked your ass, man. Yeah. You want to talk about the Redskins or no? He's like, yeah, but I got you that one time. I threw back pass to Tyler Eifert, man. Got you. Okay. Congrats, bro.
That's definitely the weird story that came out from Wade Phillips. But clearly they should have hired him, and they didn't.
Yeah.
They hired Joe Barry. Now they've got Greg Minuski. The question we're asking you is, can Jay get away with making another DC change, or will it look bad? Brian's in Waldorf. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Brian.
What's up, Grant? Danny, how you guys doing?
Doing well, buddy.
I don't think that he can make a change without looking bad, because it'll be an indictment on his prior ability to judge what's a good defensive coordinator and what's not. Making a change says, I goofed up three times prior.
I was going to say, and, again.
Yeah, another mess up.
Yeah, another mess up. Now, with that being said, I will say this. If he really thinks there's a guy out there who can make his team or his defensive unit that much better, to heck with how it looks. And if it does look bad, you're trying to win. So if he does deem a candidate that's available to be better or much better than what he has now in the Minuski, then I think he has to do it, but he'll look bad nonetheless. Hopefully it'll just be a better outcome. Thanks for taking my call, fella.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you making it. I go a couple things on this. Number one, he inherited the first guy. Bruce told him, this is your defensive coordinator. We're buds. So, okay. Then he's hired two guys. So this would be the third guy I think that Jay had full control over, which doesn't look good. I really don't care about that, though. Now, if you make another lateral move and hire a guy that wouldn't be a DC anywhere else, like you've done each of these last couple times, then, yeah, it looks atrocious.
To that point, you cannot do what you did the last two times where you fired a guy to start a search. You'd better fire a guy because you've had his replacement waiting in the wings for a couple days and no one knows about it
like
yet.
If whoever you think the best DC in the world is, for the sake of argument, the sexiest son of a gun out there that's going to do stuff we've never even seen, right? You get that guy, I don't care about the optics. Because the optics, to me, go, hey, we finally found
something
the dream
that won't
mode.
Happen, but just to your the example. If for whatever reason, like, Jay Gruden and Matt Patricia hit it off and we didn't know it, mm-hmm. and, like, they just were drinking buddies last year at the Combine,
that's
and Matt
it.
Patricia wants out of his contract to come to Washington.
That Bill Belichick's cool. A ball buster. I can't work for him anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe a more likely scenario that didn't pan out was when we thought Mr. O'Brien might be losing his job with all the reports at the end of the year, Mike Vrabel, his defensive coordinator, suddenly is available, and you go, that's a big upgrade. We got to go in that direction. Okay, fine. The name I keep coming back to is Paul Gunther. That's
their
the guy
boys.
Jay has always wanted. He just became available. I think he is going to end up John Gruden's defensive coordinator, because just like he's tight with Jay, He's very tight with John. And it seems like that's almost a done deal. Rich Bisaccia is going to coach special teams. He and Gruden get reunited. Bisaccia, a longtime Cowboys coach, actually, remember, interviewed for the Redskins head coaching job when they hired Jay, because he's a Bruce guy. And weirdly, Bruce just interviewed a bunch of his friends for that job, including one. And Jay Gruden, who was a good hire, who got the job. But Bisaccia's going to coach special teams. I think Gunther's going to coach defense. Gruden's going to handle his own offense, obviously. He'll hire some younger dude to be his OC and kind of be his organizer and tape labeler under him. So Gunther's probably not all that viable of an option, I would guess. Kevin's in Arlington. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning Gunther. In defense of Jay, and I can't believe I'm defending Jay, the guy who wanted was Gunther. And for whatever reason, and I'm sure Jay couldn't just say, I want that guy, we got him lined up. But, I mean, it just doesn't work that way with Bruce in charge of things. So I don't think it's career ending for Jay as a head coach if he wants to make a change, whether he could get Gunther or someone else who is going to do the job. But let me just sort of pivot for a second, if you will. You've got McVay going out to Los Angeles. What does he do straight away that Jay's never done? He gets a running game going. Granted, he's got Gurley, but he gets a running game going. He defends the run, and they run good special teams. When I look at Jay, I see a passing game coordinator. The guy O'Connell just got that title. That's Jay. I don't see a running game. I don't see a defense. I don't see special teams that are viable.
Can I ask you a quick question, though?
Yeah,
don't you agree that Sean McVay inherited a really good defense and a running back who was a first-round pick who is an all-pro caliber talent?
Yeah, but and I love Gurley. I've had him on my special teams, okay? And I wanted us to draft him and not Shirk, okay? But they didn't run the ball well with Gurley before. Now, granted, Jeff Fisher didn't do anything well offensively.
Sean's scheme helped him run.
I'm just saying, in his rookie year, he fixed the running game out there.
Yep.
And you know, they have excellent special teams. Look, Jay has got to fix. They can't run the ball. They can't stop the run. That's been Jay's thing all 4 years. He has a wonderful passing game, and I'm glad he's here for that. But he doesn't do the other things well, and he needs to be accountable to that.
Agreed. By the way, he's never had a good running game.
Never, ever.
When he was an OC in Cincinnati, they never ran the ball well. So I agree. That is not his strength. That's why, honestly, Bill Callahan's here. I'll bet you at some point he said to them, listen, guys, my strength is not running the football. So if I'm going to do this, if I'm just going to work, we need to get a great run game coordinator. They go, okay, we'll bring Bill Callahan over from Dallas.
And that still hasn't helped. They're the fourth worst in the league.
At least they pay him more than most offensive coordinators make.
I saw the stat. They're fourth worst in the league in terms of number of blown-up running plays. So where the first contact is made in the backfield, they have the fourth most frequency of that. I know I'm saying it in a weird way, but it's basically some of the worst teams on offense in the world get blown up the way the Redskins do. That's the company they're in. Bottom four
in
the league.
In the world, meaning like Canadian football, like the Argonauts?
Yeah, I mean, if you include the Argonauts on that list, I don't know about the Calgary Stampede. I couldn't speak to their numbers, whichever team Brandon Banks plays for. Maybe the Saskatoon Rough Riders. I don't even know. The point is, their running game stinks. It has stunk. It will continue to stink.
Yeah, the Rams ranked 19th in the league in defense this year. Last year, they were 9th in the NFL in defense. I mean, you inherited a top 10 defense if you're McVay. And then in 2015, they were 12th in defense. So they've been good on defense the last few years. I'm not taking anything away from Sean McVay. I think he's done a hell of a job.
Well, you want to talk about investment.
My point is you walked into a good job where they basically needed to fix their offense and they'd have a chance to be pretty good.
Yeah.
And they got the guy who's maybe the smartest young offensive mind in the sport.
You want to talk about, again, investment. You start going down the list of Donald and Ogletree and the cornerbacks. They have invested in that defense. It's every year they end up with a top, whatever it is, 15 pick under Jeff Fisher.
Four first-round picks on their D-line last year.
Which is, by the way, exactly what I would do. Do that, please. Redskins, take note. And they built something that can cause some havoc. Who would have thought? If you invest in the defense, it gets better.
Let's do this for our final segment. Tomorrow we've got Kirk Cousins for 2 hours. What question do you want us to ask? What question, if we don't ask, whatever you've got, fill in that blank, 800-636-1067, will we not have done a good job? That's what we want to know. We're putting together our own list, I'm sure, tonight as we sit down and we jot down ideas as to what we need to ask to make sure we do a thorough, solid job for everyone who's not going to have this access around town and around the country. 800-636-1067 is the number. Your question for Kirk Cousins that you want asked at our two-hour event at Jam and Java tomorrow. Grant and Danny, welcome back. 106.7 The Fan. Kirk Cousins, me, Danny, Jam and Java tomorrow. A couple of tickets still available. Bring your buddy, jamandjava.com, wear your Redskins gear. Come on out, ask Kirk a question. The VIPs at the event are going to get pictures and autographs from Kirk Cousins. Will it be his final event with the Redskins? Will it be our final interview with him? Well, I guess we'll get a little bit more intel, insight on that tomorrow. Go to jamandjava.com for tickets. So we're opening up the phones for you right now. What should we ask Kirk? What is the question you absolutely have to hear him answer? If you had a chance, think about this and call us. We have an opportunity to do this. We're going to jot some of these down and use some of these questions. 800-636-1067. You bump into Kirk, who had just taken a sip of truth serum at Potbelly Sandwiches in Ashburn. What's the first thing you would ask him? Wookie of the Year on Twitter says, money and length of deal aside, what's one thing you absolutely need from the organization you sign with? Then he says, what's one thing you absolutely cannot have from the organization you sign with?
Yeah.
I think that would be pretty telling.
I need to know a number of things, and we'll ask about all of these things, obviously. And then the folks in the audience will be able to ask their questions as well. It's a really cool, unique opportunity for just that. What do you want to have happen? Your dream scenario is what? I don't know that we know that. I don't know that we know the ideal. You're asleep and you're dreaming of sugar plums dancing in your heads. It's your day where you win the lottery, you get married, you buy your house, you have the kid, and everything's great. What is his dream scenario? What's his one seat? And then we'll work back from there. And what's his nightmare scenario? What's the thing that you can't have? You can't. Or is it another one of these torturous one-year situations where everything's a referendum? Do you want peace? Because that's something he talked about with us last year, what he was at peace with. And it wasn't that long-term deal, regardless maybe of what the Redskins were going to offer.
You know what I'm going to ask him, too, that I don't know that I ever have? Do you think you play any differently? I'm going to drill down on this a little bit. Being on a year-to-year referendum and contract. If you had a long-term deal, wouldn't you feel a little bit more free to take a couple more risks or to do a couple, even subconsciously, a couple things you
on
wouldn't do
on some
otherwise.
Level, right?
Yeah. I want to get into that. John... Richmond John, our boy, on Twitter says, very simple questions for Kirk. He says he's planning on coming tomorrow. What would make you stay? What would make you go elsewhere? I think simple, short questions tomorrow are probably the best way to go.
Mm-hmm.
What would make you stay? What would make you go elsewhere? Well asked. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. Walter is in Alexandria. Walt, what would you want us to ask Kirk tomorrow?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Cousins, do you think Gruden's play calling makes you a better quarterback, or would you like to get more involved in the play calling? Do you think the team would be more successful if you were to get involved and try to call some of the plays or try to play situation football? That's what I'd like to ask him.
I like it, Walt. A lot. How about comp Jay Gruden this year as a play caller to Sean McVay, who you love? Differences? Seems to me like you ran way fewer bootlegs. Cousins loves running bootlegs under Jay Gruden this year, post Sean McVay than before. You okay with that? Seems like the screen game got better this year for whatever reason.
I would say that, wouldn't you? Early especially.
Early on this year with Chris Thompson. Was that because Jay ran more screens by design, or was it because Chris Thompson improved in that capacity? Pete's in Virginia. Pete, what should we ask Kirk? The event is tomorrow at noon. You can listen live on 106.7 The Fan.
I would ask him, has he reached a boiling point where he feels so disrespected that a deal hasn't been made that he's going to leave and just say, if you think you can find somebody else better, do it.
Go find him. Good question.
Because I would have reached that point. Tell
how
you
about
that.
This? At any point during this process, have you felt disrespected?
Uh-huh.
I think that's a good question.
That's a great one.
And he mentioned Bruce Allen there.
That I got to drill down on that for sure.
That's a relationship we absolutely have to talk about. Now, here is what I don't know. I'm assuming Kirk, because he's always pretty candid with us, is going to be candid. He's not going to be 100% honest. I don't think he can be going into a negotiation. If he actually disliked Bruce Allen, which I don't know that he does, and I don't think he does, but he's not going to come out and say, I don't really like him. But is he going to say, yeah, our relationship's been rocky? To me, that would be interesting. He's the guy in that building who I think had to be won over. And it took longer to do that with him than anyone else. That would be compelling. That's something I want to know. Eric in Centerville, what should we ask Kirk Cousins on our live exclusive two-hour sit-down tomorrow?
Well, you know, nobody likes the front office, but the question I haven't heard y'all talk about is the fan base. You know, everybody, I feel like the Washington has the most fair weather fans there are, and they've turned on him many times over his career. And I wonder if he has resentment toward that, if he's willing to actually play for this team. You know, who cares about the front office? It's more about the fans anyway.
That's fascinating. Have we ever asked him about fan reaction? Like, if we, you know,
we have.
Him? We should ask him the Griffin thing. If Griffin was never here, do you think you would have as many people that don't like you in Washington as do?
I mean, so we've discussed it. We've beat around the bush there, so to speak, where we haven't said, hey, are you aware that there are thousands of people that don't like you? You never said it like that, but we've done the, do you hear some of the noise? Some of the guys that almost can't wait for you to fail because they've got some kind of agenda. Has that gotten to you? And he's been obviously very diplomatic and great about answering.
Do you know that there is a pocket of fans that root against you? Why do you think that is? Does that matter at all? Because I know in talking to him both on the air and in the locker room at times, off the air, the number of people that support and like him as Redskins fans far exceeds and outweighs that. That's always, to me, what he focuses on. Like, I always wonder sometimes, does he even know about the number of people, the Chris's in D.C.?
Yeah, he can't block every mention.
500 yards and five touchdowns would come on the air and say, but they were five or six in the red zone and he didn't score that one time and they lost, though. I mean, does he know that there are 10% of Redskins fans that think that way? Tim in D.C., what's up?
Hey, guys. I think one of the biggest questions I want to know is that his success, is he the knock on him has been he's a system guy, and he's a Gruden system guy. So you remove him from that system. Does he think that the system has created his success?
Wow.
He's created it, or Gruden and him created it, because there is a knock on him. And if you remove him from the system, he's going to flounder. And a lot of people believe that.
That's a great question.
It's a really good one. Because there's a symbiosis, obviously, between system and quarterback. And if you thrive in one, you should keep that. And that's why we advocated making far greater steps than the Redskins did to lock him up long term. Because you can criticize someone as being a system quarterback, but the results are 4,900 yards and 29 touchdowns. That's pretty good. The idea that this, you know, it's like swimming in one body of water. Can you go swim in another? Or is it not water at all? It's a different liquid if you go to a different offense.
Carlos says, does Bruce saying your name wrong bother you? I've asked him that before.
And he's always
said that
it
doesn't bother him. So take that for what it's worth, but that is what he says. Tomorrow, noon, Jam and Java. You can buy tickets. There's a few left. JamandJava.com. If you've got VIP tickets, make sure you bring something to get signed and you get ready for your picture. All the money raised is going to the D.C. Dream Center. We'll do our entire show, obviously, 10 to 2 tomorrow.
Please text me.
From Fairfax. I will text you in the morning to remind you.
Thank you.
So hopefully we're going to see you guys. If not, make sure you're tuned in throughout the show and certainly at noon tomorrow on Grant and Danny. If you've got questions you want us to ask, you can send them to us at Grant H. Paulson.
At Funny Danny for me.
Chad Dukes versus the world is up next. If he can start his show on time, looks like he's over there filling out a timesheet.
Ask Dukes about his timesheet, 800-636-1067.
And I think what you should ask him is,
check up on it.
When he fills out his timesheet, does he use a pen? Does he use a Sharpie? Is it more of a pencil?
Does he do it once in pencil, then go over it in pen, retrace those numbers to make sure the accuracy? He wants to do a diligent and judicious timesheet. Ask Dukes about his timesheet anytime throughout the show today.
He was telling me he's going to fill out a couple just because the first one wasn't as neat as he liked.
Right, he likes to have a very orderly.
He filled out the first one, and then he filled out a second one because he wanted it very legible.
The quote was, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to take great care in doing it. That's CDD together. Oh.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.